Jeff Merrick, taking off the wedding band.
I know.
Ladies.
Every Friday, have two Saturdays. Let's go.
Ladies, Jeff Merrick is taking off the wedding band.
Elliot Friedman, the Avs are out. A few teams are out now. We're down to the final four. But let's start with the most recent news, or the most recent team to say bye-bye, and that is Colorado. Your main takeaway from the Avs season and main takeaway from the playoffs.
The number one thing I thought of, and I got this in a call on Thursday morning, is Gabriel Landeskog is going to get every call for the rest of his career.
Why?
So we all know the big controversial play. Gabriel Landeskog is going to the bench for a line change. He's out there a bit too long for whatever reason. And Dan Darrow, who is the video coach for the San Jose Sharks, says, we have to challenge this. And it's a huge call because if he's wrong, it's a 2-2 game and Colorado is going on the power play. But they trust him. He got Winnipeg earlier in the year in a big game.
If you watch the top of your screen here, it's Gabriel Landeskog that's coming off the ice here and he's changing. This puck is going out of the zone. And here it is. Is he off the ice before this puck goes over? And I'll tell you, both feet were firmly planted on the ice inside the zone when that puck entered.
You don't think the left foot was on the line?
Good point.
Hard to tell.
Yeah, you know what? It's so he's a sixth player on the ice that hasn't gotten off onto the bench.
And he's right. Officials say, you know, that's the right call. And I have a buddy who lives in Denver, and he watched the post-game coverage on the Altitude Network. And he said, wow, were those guys riled up, like Kyle Keefe and Mark Rycroft. And, you know, that's the Avalanche broadcast. They are there to defend their team. He said it was riveting television watching how angry those guys were.
I can imagine Rycroft going banana sandwich.
Kyle Keefe was, I saw his tweets, and he was riled up too.
Show us the proof that caused you to reverse the call.
Yeah.
Because I don't see it. I don't see a camera angle because the call on the ice was a goal.
Well, and if I'm the linesman on the ice there and the guys on the headset are telling me, hey, this is, you know, you can't, they're telling him this is, I'm losing rattled? My train of thought. We're rattled here. But yeah, if the guys in the headset are telling them 100% it's offsides and I'm looking at that video on that iPad and I'm going,
no, it isn't.
Really?
This is the one I showed overhead. This is the clearest look that
now,
the puck is still in the neutral zone, okay?
Yep.
He's on the blue line. Now, you tell me that Gabe Landeskog is not touching the blue line with 100% confidence in a Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs that you have enough proof to change a call in a game of this magnitude.
Yeah.
There was no time spent on this.
You know what? It was a quick review. This is going to be the play that changes the offside rule in the offseason. This
exactly.
is what it's going to take. A team losing a series because of an offside call, a stupid call the NHL put
well,
in. Scott.
And
now
you're looking at two game sevens that have been decided
exactly.
by potential,
yes.
absolutely ridiculous calls on a 5-minute major in round one,
yep.
and then a possible offside call. And this is, you're going back to what the NFL instituted after the pass interference
yep.
in the Super Bowl.
Look, I get that people are going to say, oh, look at this guy. He's a homer, you know, all that sort of stuff.
There's no homer business there,
just,
man. That's the truth.
Give me an explanation. I mean, there is no explanation for that. What happens is it's a trickle-down effect that when you miss one call, they start to pile up. And, yeah, that's when you start to get emotional and irrational and all that stuff.
I'm just saying, if there is another angle that can prove that Gabe Landeskog was not touching the blue line,
please show us so we can just...
Show me.
So we can sleep tonight, because if not, we're going to lose sleep until about 3 months from now.
You know, Landeskog had every excuse in the world to say that's a BS call or that's not what the rule was supposed to be, and he ate it. He stood up there and he ate it.
A lot of people questioning the call, not your performance on that play. You're kind of saying you put it on yourself instead of what everyone
yeah,
else is questioning.
I mean, I haven't watched it in slow-mo like I'm sure everybody at home got to do, but... Hopefully the linesman got it right, and to be honest with you, Derek and Scott, they were out there working the game tonight. I mean, I don't envy their, you know, that position at all to have to make that call on a Game 7 like this. So it's a tough job, and it's a tough call to have to make, but hopefully they got it right. And, you know, yeah, I'm going to take, you know, blame for that because I could have done a lot of things different. So ultimately my skates are on the ice. But, hey, I don't know if... that's all you guys want to talk about, the offside, but I think there was a lot more to the game than just that.
I mean, you guys battled till the very end. I mean,
didn't embarrass officials.
Didn't embarrass anyone, and someone said to me on Thursday morning, Gabriel Landeskog is getting every call for the rest of his career because people notice those things.
So the opposite of Brad Marchand is going to be Gabriel Landeskog.
You know, I don't want to get into Marchand. You know, we set our piece.
I'm not going to bring up Marchand right now. I'm just saying where someone will not get the benefit of the doubt, this player will.
Yes.
The complete opposite.
Landeskog is going to get the benefit of the doubt.
If you picked any one player who would be in that situation where not paying attention to the finest point of a play, the last guy that I would choose to be in that situation on the Avalanche would be Gabriel Landeskog.
You know, I thought Nick and Kelly did an unbelievable job during the broadcast of just breaking down what happened there. Nick making the point that he didn't get off the ice as fast as he possibly could.
Yep.
And Kelly making the point because, you know, I wouldn't have thought about this not being a goalie, that it used to be in San Jose the backup goalie sat across the ice in the walk-off corridor, the vomitory. And now that bench, I guess, has been extended where the goalie can sit there, but it's far. You know, normally the goalie, he can't reach it from there, Varlamov. But I think also the other players on the bench should have been yelling at him or opening the door, jump, whatever. Like, there were a lot of mistakes there. Now, you know, there are people who still say to me that you can't prove he was offside. It has to be conclusive. The one thing I do know is that the linesmen make that call. The situation room doesn't. And from what I understand, the situation room left that totally in the linesmen's hands. Like, they were, okay, whatever you guys think in this one. And they know the rule better than anyone else. So you have to trust that they know what they're doing. And I think in this case, they did. You have to all be tagged up at the exact same time. And it's tough to say that they did that based on that replay. And the other thing is, if you continue to read the delayed offside rule, there is a part that says exactly what a guy changing has to be.
Yep.
And that is in the bench, and the other guy has to come on the neutral zone, which Colin Wilson did, but he's not in the bench. Yep. So I can see why it's the right call. I'm just really beginning to hate the offside review. I think we are slicing the onion too fine.
That was a lively conversation we had with Ron about that last night. It was really good. The whole thing that you guys did, I know here we are, you know, bigging up our broadcast, but I thought you guys did a great job of it last night.
Well, I think the other thing that our guys did that was really good was getting the other examples of, like, Ryan O'Reilly hustling off the ice in Game 7, St. Louis-Dallas. So I thought our production guys and the other on-air guys had a really strong night. I just think this offside review, I know I saw one tweet was really funny last night, like, Matt Duchene ruined the NHL because this whole offside thing happened because of him. But I look at this and I'm like, this is not what was intended. You know what we've learned? We've learned linesmen in this league, they call offside pretty well.
You know, it's funny, when the offside review was introduced, I did this little thing on Twitter where I said, you know, I wonder if we audit all the great plays and the great goals, you know, from history, whether it's the Henderson goal, whether it's, you know, Nystrom scoring on the Flyers, whether it's whatever. And we went back and we looked at the zone entry, how many would be called back?
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. And I had people tweeting me video of it, the zone entries on those plays. Not one was bad. Like, of all, you would have figured, like, of all those great goals. I know there was one in that Nystrom game, the 1980 Stanley Cup, but that was in the first period.
Yeah.
Like, but Nystrom's goal was onside. Like, of all of those.
Pat Quinn
ones,
would disagree with you if
course,
he was
of,
still
of,
here.
Of course he would. Of course he would. And maybe even, who would have produced? John Shannon would have been the exec producer of Hockey Night.
No,
for that.
I think 1980? That
was his first. I think John was on Hockey. John worked Hockey Night.
I'll have to ask
I think
him.
At that one. I think that might have been his first. But it was amazing how many. To that point about linesmen getting it right, like, across the board, all the zone entries were clean. Mm-hmm. So while that review was going on yesterday, okay, and it was, and we're trying to scramble to figure out, and you put out the tweet, you know, look at the player on the boards, and we all tried to realize what was going on. I'm texting back and forth with Steve Fallon.
Yeah.
So Steve Fallon, for those of you that don't know, runs Sportsnet Stats, the Twitter feed. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful guy. Really thoughtful dude. So his first instinct was, considering this was the initial play that led to this video review so many years ago, 2013, February 18th, was Matt Duchene. His first question was, I wonder if there's any players on Colorado who were on the ice when it happened back in 2013 that were still on the ice. So we went back and found none. So February 18, 2013, Tyson Berry is on the team, but not on the ice.
Landeskog.
Semyon Varlamov.
Oh, he was there then, eh?
Semyon Varlamov in net 213, but he was backing up. Grubauer last night. But you know the interesting one from that game? Wasn't on the ice, but was on the team where the egregious happened.
Okay, let me think. Hold on. Somebody who was must have been involved last night somehow.
Yep.
John Michael Lyles?
No. Nope.
Okay. Because he would have been on the broadcast team. Hold on. Let me think. Time out. Play the Jeopardy music with that gambler who's making $1 billion on it.
Plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times, 11 times by this player. Joe,
who's Magic Johnson?
Oh no. Diane?
Who's Wayne Gretzky?
Wayne Gretzky. We're talking about hockey, not the NBA.
I know I'm going to kick myself.
No, you're thinking wrong right now.
I am, eh?
You're thinking wrong. Okay, you're thinking right. Colorado. Who are they playing?
No, I'm thinking who's on San Jose that used to play in Colorado?
No, this is back in that game.
Oh, they're
in 2013.
Playing Nashville.
They were playing Nashville. Who's on that team?
Who's now in San Jose or in Colorado? Colin Wilson.
Colin Wilson, who scored the goal.
Who scored the goal, who came on the ice for him.
Correct.
Good job, Felon. Did he tweet that out?
No, because I came up with that one. He was looking at Colorado, too, and I texted him. I said, hey, was Colin Wilson on the ice in Nashville?
For people who don't listen to the podcast, I'm going to put that in the blog this week.
All right, there you go.
And I'm crediting both of you guys.
I will show you our text exchange.
No, I believe you.
I will hand it over. I'll hand you my iPhone right now.
I don't
want to
read your texts. You already took off your wedding band this week. I don't want to read your text messages.
Amel makes me take my wedding band off because when I tap my microphone, it rings. Mm. So I'm getting treated like a war criminal for wearing my wedding ring. Thanks, Amel. Outside of Gabriel Landeskog,
yep.
And he's going to get the benefit of the doubt for the rest of his career for not embarrassing anybody. Look, everything is all based on expectations, whether it's sports or life. Based on expectations, that was enough for Colorado to fans to say, that was a great season.
Well, here's what I say. Number one, if we were picking our Central Division favorites next year, who would be number one?
Right now, St. Louis.
I think a lot of people would be picking Colorado.
Over St. Louis?
Yeah.
And you think it's a mirage?
No, I don't believe it's a mirage.
You just think Colorado's taking that huge bump?
I think people are going to look at Colorado and they're going to say their team to beat. And they've also got the number four overall pick.
Yeah, two in the first, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, too. They're going to have, as you mentioned, 30-something million in cap space.
Yeah, I think it's 32. Now, they've got Mikko Rantanen.
They've got to deal with Rantanen.
That's a biggie, but they've got room to do stuff. Just looking
they've
at
got room
cap
to
friendly.
Do stuff. They've got
room.
A lot of D. Like, you know, Tyson Berry's going to be going in the last year of his deal.
Correct, at 5.5.
So, you know, you're going to have a decision to make there. And they have the fourth overall pick. Now, the interesting thing about this in the draft is, one of the big conversations about the draft right now is Podkolzin, the Russian.
Vasily Podkolzin, yeah.
So he's got, I think, 2 years left in Russia. And there's no question he's one of the top skilled players in this draft.
Yep.
Okay? But the only teams who can afford to take him near the top are teams that can afford to be patient. Like, we know Hughes, Kako are going 1-2, whichever order.
Yeah.
And right
then
now,
Chicago.
3-4-5, there seems to be... Guys told me they think it's Byram, Turcotte, 3-4, in whatever order. Now, Sam Zegras really likes him. So the draft really begins at 3 with Chicago.
Yep.
And they think that those three players are there. But Colorado at 4, they probably can be patient. Like, do they take the most skilled player in the draft knowing that they have enough
somewhere
that they
on the
can
horizon.
Last
yeah.
for 2 years? And the other team people look at, they don't think L.A. can do it because L.A. has to start going. But the other team is Detroit at 6 because Yzerman, he's got a ticket to wait as long as he wants to wait.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at Colorado in the number 4 spot, the number one thing I look at with them is they, as much as anyone else in the top 4, have ability to take maybe the most skilled player in this draft and wait 2 years for him to show up. And that's a great luxury to be in.
I can't remember which general manager said this to you and me. You'll probably recall. On lottery day, when we talked about winners, losers on lottery and all that, and this GM said to us, there's only one winner today, and that's Colorado, because we're all going home and he's going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
and he's got the fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
He wins.
Yeah.
Colorado wins. They're in a great spot
was Shiro.
Right now. Was it Shiro that
yeah,
said that?
Yeah.
Who stood out for you? I mean, McKinnon, obviously. For me, JT Compher was fantastic. Cale Makar, small sample, sure, but he looked so legit. Who stood out
for
you?
Well, Compher took a big step. I thought Tyson Jost, who had a really tough year. Yep. Like there were some people there, way too young, but starting to write him off a bit. He had a big finish, scored the goals in three straight games for the first time in his career. I mean, look, Girard and Makar, I mean, how much can you not like it? I mean, like, they're fantastic.
Just as an aside, based on his size, much like we look at, you know, how big Zdeno Chara's stick is, does Samuel Girard have the smallest stick in the NHL?
I know. It's unbelievable. Like, it really is something to watch. You know, I thought it was a win for Grubauer, too.
Yes.
Guy got pulled at the beginning of the playoffs last year. There's a lot to like about Colorado's team. And, you know, every time we look at the Avalanche, the thing I always remember is Joe Sakic and Jared Bednar. Joe Sakic having to hire Jared Bednar in August. And that first year being such a disaster and seeing Sakic at the next year's draft lottery and me asking, is Bednar coming back? And he said, we weren't fair to him. The easy thing to do was fire him. Mm-hmm. And now look where you are. And it's funny, too. Like, I got a call the other day. You know, Seattle's GM, Hunt, I think, has been kind of thrown into a bit of a tizzy because both Holland and McCrimmon are off.
Yep.
I had someone the other day say that if Seattle was smart, they would talk to Chris McFarland, who's Joe Sakic's right-hand man.
Yep.
Now, I think Seattle wants to hire someone who's got a lot of experience, and Chris has been around for a while. They just said that if you take a look at it, what set them off, it was that Duchesne deal, and they waited for a year while they got killed for not doing it. I just thought that was really interesting.
I know this is, you know, ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. But it wasn't that long ago.
My favorite line is if my aunt had...
Yes, she'd be my uncle.
Yes.
Do you ever sit back and say, this has been wonderful, what a great, you know, this is, you know, Joe Sakic helping to cement the reputation as a high-end GM. Look what, you know, patient Joe has been able to do. And look at this team that he's been able to put together. Do you ever wonder what Colorado would be like if they were successful in landing Kyle Dubas?
I've thought about that. I mean, obviously, history changes for everybody, but it kind of worked out for everyone, right? It worked out for the Avalanche because they kept the group and they've done a good job, and it worked out for Dubas because he ended up being the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a great question, though. Really interesting question.
All right.
By the way, I also wanted to give Rantanen credit for playing after that Burns hit. Like, Calvert, who's a tough guy, couldn't go.
Yep.
And Rantanen gutted it out. Initially, it didn't even look like he could move. And McKinnon, too.
How about Nathan McKinnon?
Yeah.
Like 14 minutes, gonzo.
His arm was hanging listlessly.
Like, I know that
when he went off the ice.
It's the playoffs, and we expect at a certain point every team is going to be filled with extras from the Thriller video. I understand that. That's what your team's going to look like eventually.
That.
But holy smokes. Between Rantanen and McKinnon, two of their top three guys.
And, you know, McKinnon at the end of the game's on the point, and we're all kind of looking at it like he's not going to be able to shoot. And then he got one through that almost got tipped into the net, and Jones made a hell of a save.
Yeah. Listen, congrats to the Avalanche. Wonderful season and a lot of fun to watch, and they will be for a number of years. When we come back, we'll talk about another team that we're saying goodbye to. And that's the Dallas Stars. And what's next? Oh, by the way, before we go to break and start the podcast here, Dan Darrow, I didn't see it on Cap Friendly. Is he UFA? I'm sure some other teams might come asking. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali.
Time here in Game 7. If you're just tuning in or you're wondering what you're listening to tonight, Blues and Stars tied 1-1, done in the first, Zuccarello in the first, those are the goal scorers. Blues have the puck, Thomas off the wall, shoots, and it's in! They score! It's the St. Louisan! Pat Maroon! Bring out the Zamboni! Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he sends them to the conference finals! A 2-1 in double overtime over the Dallas Stars. Pat Maroon
more hockey in his garage. Oh, terrific face-off win by Tyler Bozak. Robert Thomas takes it, drags it, makes an incredible, incredible one-on-one move, throws it at the net. Ben Bishop gets a piece. It's sitting right behind him, and the big rig cleans up the trash, and he sends the Blues off to the Western Conference Finals.
We'll just let you listen as they shake hands at center ice.
Chris Kerber, the voice, the legendary station KMOX in St. Louis. And that ended the season, Elliot Friedman, for the Dallas Stars. So the question now becomes, what's next for Dallas? We all know the beginning of the season with Jim Leitz. Things didn't exactly go swimmingly for the Dallas Stars. Turned it around and became a nice story by the end. Where are you at on Dallas right now?
You know, I think they'll break down how it ended. One shot in the second period. Until they reunited the big line in overtime, that ice was tilted.
Oh,
it was all St. Louis. I assume they're going to re-sign Zuccarello. Spezza's coming off their cap.
So, hang on. So, if they re-sign, just for on the same, but if they re-sign Zuccarello, the Rangers get a first-round pick in 2020.
Yes, okay. That is correct. The Rangers almost got two first-rounders out of that deal.
I mean, bing!
I have a feeling that all those Rangers employees were wearing green on Tuesday night. But I assume they'll re-sign Zuccarello with some of Spezza's money. You know, they've got to sign Lindell. It's at two. And despite what happened to him in the one game, he's a really good player for them. Hintz has really come on.
I'll ask you bluntly, have they found their second line center?
Yes, I think they have.
Even in that boot in game seven, he looked fast.
He looked unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was terrific. I still think there's going to be a lot of hard feelings in Dallas over that whole situation with Leitz and the two big players.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, where that goes.
We've wondered before on this podcast what happens with Jamie Benn at various times and the Dallas Stars organization. Should we continue to ask questions or should we stop?
I think we'll know this summer.
That line had a hard time against St. Louis.
Yes.
Four goals.
Yep.
That series against St. Louis was carried by the quote-unquote depth guys.
Yep.
What do you think about Jamie Benn? In Dallas.
See, I think there's going to be a conversation at the end of the season, and it's now. You know, what is everybody thinking here? You know, Jamie Benn controls this. Would he want to go anywhere?
I know it's a small thing. Equipment geeks are going to love this. Stick geeks are going to love this.
Mm-hmm.
If Jamie Benn has a toe curve, Dallas probably goes on. That wraparound in overtime, if he has a like an Ovechkin-style curve on his stick, Dallas wins that game in a game they had no business winning.
Well, the other thing, too, is someone said to me this morning that if you look at Binnington's pad, almost all of it is in the net.
100%.
He hit the one place on the pad where it was going out instead of in.
Yeah. Instead of talking about, well, what's the future of Jamie Benn, we're talking about the cemented hero, Jamie Benn, in a game they had no business winning, despite the fact that, you know, listen, Cogliano had a chance, Radek Foxa with the blockers.
Well, in regulation, in the overtime, they finally started getting chances.
But that Jamie Benn wraparound, like that was, to your point about where Bennington's left pad is, that was the one. And I look at him, just the geek in me comes out, oh, look at the blade. If the curve is more down the blade, that thing's, yeah.
Yes, that's a great point, actually, Jeff. I don't think about that stuff as well as you do. That's a really good point.
Stuff like that kept me single for a lot of years. Don't be too impressed.
I had my own issues. But that's still really good. I just wonder, like, at some point in time, you have to figure there's going to be a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How do they feel? How does he feel? Does the way the season ended change anything? I can't imagine he wants to go anywhere. But the number one thing for Dallas is, imagine selling the outdoor game if they miss the playoffs.
Right. You talked about that before.
Now there's a better feeling.
There's a better feeling because a number of players, new players as well. We've talked a lot about when teams come knocking on the Dallas Stars' door for trades. Those names include Hintz.
Mm-hmm.
Those names include Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
Haskinen. Certainly, we suspect Ottawa would have, you know, when they were shopping around Eric
Carlson. Haskinen, I heard, was never involved.
Never going, but you don't think the Pierre Dorion asked?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they did, yeah.
And now you have the beginnings of what you're looking at as the next wave of Dallas Star player. And it's pretty exciting. Like, we just talked about Colorado a couple of seconds ago, and I loved that Colorado-Dallas rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
The night, I loved it. It was fantastic.
Those were nasty games.
Nasty, ugly games. So anything that brings those two teams back on the ice together as their fortunes rise,
mm-hmm.
sign me up. And it looks like we're heading in that direction. But to your point about the outdoor game, all of a sudden you've got a pretty hot Dallas team to sell.
Yes, and they're all going to be a year older. Haskin's going to be a year older. Lindell's going to be a year older. You know, we're forgetting Klingberg, who I thought was really good.
Yep.
He's going to be a year older. Hintz is going to be a year older. They're going to have that experience. If you look at them on paper, they should be a lot better. Something was missing this year. They eventually found it. Are they going to be able to keep it?
Was that one thing that was missing all this time?
I like Montgomery, too.
I like him a lot as well. Mm-hmm. First met him at the draft last year, mm-hmm. and then that's just to meet him personally, and then to watch him this season, I like him a lot. Was that one thing a save that you're talking about? And see, in a lot of ways, listen, Ben Bishop in that Game 7, and you were talking to Kelly on Hockey Night.
I don't know how you could blame him for anything.
No, not a chance. It's interesting, you know, Brian Burke brought up a great point on radio yesterday. We were talking about that final play because a lot of things happen. It's a set play. Bozak wins a drawback. Robert Thomas, right shot, lines up on the left side, circles around, grabs the puck, pins Klingberg, okay, comes in and shoots. Maroon goes to the net. That's his job on that play. The puck hits the goalpost. Okay, Bishop's out. So Bishop hears the puck hit the post. As a goaltender, you hear that behind you. What are you scared of?
It hits you in coming back.
So what does he do? He flattens out,
yep.
And Maroon goes over and taps it in. But the one thing about Ben Bishop, the reputation was always, he's not going to be there till the end for you. Injuries are always going to be a factor.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Bishop was outstanding. And Dallas was one of those teams, and we saw that before. We talked about it on the podcast last week. One of those teams that platoons goaltenders. And they did with this
Well,
year,
you know who
Hudo.
Did? Boston did too, Rask.
Carolina mm-hmm. did it. Like the Islanders did it. Carolina, like teams that made it out of the first round, did this with their goaltenders in the regular season.
I think it caught up to the Islanders at the end, though.
Of course it did.
I think Leonard, I was surprised that they didn't start Greiss in game four. I think Leonard was exhausted.
Considering Greiss's record and performance against Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, Greiss started 43 games in the regular season. Leonard started 39. Leonard had started four games in a row only twice all year. And I know there had been a break between the first and second round. I simply thought he ran out of steam.
Thoughts on Ben Bishop? We'll get back to the original point.
I thought he was great. He's a really funny goalie to watch because he always looks like he's injured.
How so?
Well, when you watch him, especially late in the year, if you go back to the 2015 Stanley Cup Final, he was making some saves and he was getting up slowly or he looked like he was stretching his body.
He's
and
a
you're
big
like,
guy.
But no, but he has a long history of injuries late in the season, right?
Yep.
In that Stanley Cup final, he looked like he was battling injury. And there were points in that game in Game 7 where he looked like he was battling injury. And Kelly and I always look at that, and I always ask Kelly, like, what do you think? And there were times in that game where it looked like he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fantastic. It's just sometimes the way he looks, it's like, what am I seeing here? Is there something wrong? But at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is your production, and he was phenomenal. And him and Khudobin were, after so many years of Dallas not getting goaltending, they got goaltending.
They got it right. And I remember talking to Jim Nill about it when it was Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen. The first thing he says, look, we're paying him a lot of money. We're splitting games between these two because our travel is the worst.
Yeah.
So for Dallas, it's more out of necessity by way of travel to mm-hmm. keep them healthy. I mean, Carolina is deliberate.
Yeah.
The Islanders are
deliberate.
Like, there are teams that platoon goaltenders deliberately. Dallas is a case study in it. You wonder if that becomes more of a thing in the NHL. Now, you can make the argument for Colorado, but that was more because, you know, Varlamov fell off after the first month of the season. But they split games.
Well, here's the question. Are there 62, soon to be 64 goalies?
That's the great question. That's it, because I firmly believe we're in the era of redefining what a backup goaltender is.
Yep.
And, you know, listen, when you're Montreal and you have Carey Price, you kind of stick to that traditional model of we're going to ride this
and
guy
plus
hard.
Your travel's a lot easier in Montreal.
Totally. But when you're a team like Dallas, you need that. One point I want to make from last week, it's a holdover point. So we were talking about Kyle Dubas with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds and how they had someone who worked in the ticketing department who would do player tracking for them on the road.
Yep.
With a Sharpie and a notebook. Like, it was bare bones, but we're all doing this together with whichever resources we have. This is MacGyver. It's toothpaste. It's toothpicks. And we're putting this thing together. So I couldn't remember the guy's name. And I got a text after the podcast was uploaded from Kyle Raftus. Kyle is the general manager of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And he said, the guy you're thinking of, his name is Matt Rodell.
Okay.
At that time, he was – this is a sort of story for everyone who's looking to get into the industry to do something. So he's the guy that would help, you know, Dubas and Sheldon Keefe with the player tracking on the road. He started in ticket sales. Okay? That was his job. And last year, after the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds had a fantastic season, you know, topping the CHL rankings almost every single week, they lost to the Hamilton Bulldogs, led by Robert Thomas, in an exciting final. They had a great season. Matt Rodell was hired by the Texas Stars. He is now their video coach.
Nice.
So he went from working in ticketing, all right, working ticket sales, to putting his hand up and saying, I know it's not my job, but can I help out here, Kyle?
There's a lesson there.
There's a huge lesson there.
Got to start somewhere.
Wanting to get into this industry, Matt Rodell, good for you. And now he's working with the Texas Stars of the American Hockey League as a video coach.
Nice.
There you go. Okay. Ken Holland and Edmondson.
Yep.
You were on this early. You've been on this one for a while, he was the preferred candidate.
You know, I felt that way, and enough people who knew better felt that way. He said at the media conference that...
And I went over to the World Under-18 Championships with Steve, with Chris Draper, with the Red Wings staff. And as I was over there, I realized that I had the passion, the energy, the enthusiasm, the desire to continue to be a general manager in the National Hockey League. And when I got back, Bob reached out to me, and we spent a lot of time on the phone over the last few days, and ultimately came to the decision to be here today.
Mm-hmm. I have heard that from several people, that once he got over the initial change in Detroit, he's at the under-18s, he's scouting players. Like, one thing that – I think we talked about this last time, but one thing that someone told me was he worked hard this year.
For a guy
who's 63 years old, he wasn't sitting around. He was working. So he got bitten by the bug at the under-18s. Who can we take? Who do I want to pick? Like, that kind of a thing. And that really launched him back into the conversation. Plus, I also think when Edmonton lost Kelly McCrimmon, I think Bob Nicholson's like, I'm not losing Ken Holland. Here's the offer. I also heard that... Holland had a conversation with Lou Lamoriello, who is one of the GMs who's older than him, and Lamoriello's in his 70s, and Lamoriello said to him, I still love it. Like, I love it. And Holland thought that, and I don't know if this is true, Doug McLean. I don't know if it's true. I'll just tell you what I heard. I heard that he was, if not the number one contender in Seattle, he was had a great shot at the job. And Holland,
would that have been something that he coveted?
Well, I, something
people
he
put in, it together because he's from BC, want to go back home, finish out the
I
career.
I think he was really interested, but I think the other thing, too, is that he knew that if he took that job, the puck's not getting dropped until he's 65. Yep. So I think he felt that if he was going to jump back in, it was important to do it now. You know, I thought he was really good at the press conference. See, the thing about a guy like Ken Holland is he's seen everything. Like, any question that he was going to be hit up with, he was probably expecting it. Mm-hmm. It's looked to me like he was expecting to give a good answer. Like, I've been a GM for 22 years. I make mistakes. There's not much you're going to be able to throw at him that's going to surprise him. It'll be interesting to see the choices he makes. I'm going to miss, like, when you called Ken Holland and you said, okay, what's going on? You'd get a 37-minute dissertation that would end with, and that's the Detroit Red Wings. And there were no follow-ups. Like, there was no possible way you could think of anything. Well, I would, but you generally couldn't.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be, and now that's the Edmonton Oilers. And I think Tippett is the top candidate for coach. And, you know, then we'll see what kind of happens from there.
Why Tippett?
I've heard from a few people.
So someone look at Dave Tippett and say, why are you, and listen, his reputation and the way that he coaches is defense first. You learn how to play the defensive side of the puck. And some might look at this and say, hang on a second. You've got a Ferrari in Connor McDavid. Why are you putting bungee cords on his hockey pants?
Well, the thing is, the interesting about that is I'm curious to see if there's some different rules for McDavid than there are for others. That's number one, because there should be. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that'll be a part of the conversation. I think when you look at that team, they're going to have to be somewhat stringent, depending on what happens in goal and on defense, mm-hmm. to make it work. You know, one thing that this league teaches you now is you have to have some structure. If it's not Tippett.
Todd Nelson?
Todd Nelson, I think, is going to be in
you
there.
Do, yeah.
I do, because, you know, Ken Holland likes Todd Nelson. Ken Holland was very loyal to Jeff Blashill.
Yes.
But I think when there were times when he was weighing if he would ever have to do it, I think Tippett's name was in the mix, and I think Todd Nelson's name was in the mix. I'll tell you, the other guy I could see getting an interview there is DJ Smith.
Okay.
I've heard there's some like for him.
Do you know how Holland does his coaches? Some GMs will say, coach picks one assistant, I pick the other. Do we know how Ken Holland
When Babcock was there, Babcock had a lot of say. When Blashill was there, I think Blashill had say on one of the guys, and I think Holland had say on the other.
One of the interesting things about the courtship of Ken Holland was how the number came out, how the 5x5. And I'm not asking you to give up a source. Here's what I'm getting at.
I don't like that. I'll tell you this, and Greg and I had a DM exchange over it, and we're fine. I just I'm going to tell everybody a story here. Okay, so I hate when people in media guess sources. Okay, I hate it because people get in trouble for that, and if you get labeled as someone like I know someone, I'm not going to say who their name is. But they got in huge trouble with their organization, got branded in their organization because somebody felt that they were accused of being a source to me. Mm-hmm. And I actually called the GM and I said, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it's not him. And he goes, well, unless you tell me who it really is, I'm going to assume it's him.
That's wrong.
And I said to him, that's BS, but I'm not telling you who it is. Like, I mean, you're only as good as your word, okay? So I hate when people guess sources. So when Greg Wyshynski made the comment that he heard that Nicholson let it leak because he felt that he wanted to say to people, look, I made my best effort. I felt compelled. Like, I don't like to argue with people on Twitter. I think it's a losing proposition. But I felt compelled to come out and say that is not true. I just don't think media should be guessing on sources because it encourages people not to talk, and people do get in legit trouble for that.
We now know how much money a lot of the coaches make. Like, that's become more and more public.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get there now with general managers? Is this going to be the tipping point?
As a reporter, I hope so.
For the GMs?
Well, it's a whole funny thing. Like, when I reported that on Saturday night, I had a couple GMs who texted me like, are you sure? And I said around 5x5, I think is what I said. And that's because I think it might be a tiny bit shy of that, but it's in that ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And in 24 hours, nobody called me to tell me I was bananas. So I knew it was close to true. And I could hear the rejoicing. Like, I had one guy who called me up and said, I can't wait to argue that I'm 50% as good as Ken Holland.
That's a great line.
Yes.
Goaltending with the Edmonton Oilers. Like, listen, there's a lot of decisions Ken Holland has to make. The Milan Lucic contract is one of them, and goaltending is another. And Ken Holland, I can't remember where he said it, but talked about, we'll get our goaltender in free agency.
Well, I mean, he knows Peter Mrazek pretty well.
See, that's one
but
that
it
I
didn't
thought,
end well in Detroit.
No, and then you make the list, and it's Varlamov, it's Bobrovsky, it's Mike Smith, Cam Ward, Brian Elliott, Neuvirth, you mentioned Mrazek, Robin Lehner.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crop.
Yep.
Right there.
And you're already paying Koskinen for 3 more years.
Is he a buyout candidate?
I think someone told me they might buy out someone. That's a good question. That's a question worth pursuing. Hmm. He's on your cap for 6 years.
Yep. Like, this is going to be a tough one. This is both undoing a knot and building at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would buy him out. If you hire a coach, one of the questions in your interviews is, how can we make this better? Like, we talked about Kovalchuk, right? Like, you're interviewing Todd McClellan if you're the Kings. If you're trading him or buying him out, it's not helpful to you. The question is, how can we make this better?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question I'm asking. Like, Koskinen showed enough in some games that there's something there. Can you make this better? I would give him another year, unless he's just for some reason a guy you don't want around, and I've got no reason to believe that.
Do you think that there is, for Ken Holland, and everything is going to be under the microscope, whatever he does, everyone's going to try to read into his style with the Oilers and how he's going to handle Edmonton, and is it going to be different than how he handled the Detroit Red Wings? Because with Edmonton, he walks in without loyalty. In Detroit, certainly there was loyalty to a lot of players, and we saw that reflected in the contracts. With Edmonton, he doesn't come in with that loyalty.
Yep.
To these players. For you, is there a canary in the coal mine decision that you can look out? Maybe it's the decision with the goaltender, the decision with Milan Lucic.
I could see somebody getting bought out.
Is it the Chiasson contract? Because traditionally, Ken Holland has rewarded players like that.
Yeah.
Is there a test case decision that Ken Holland's going to make that we're going to look at and say, okay, that's how he plans to run this thing?
Well, I think the one thing is that they're kind of capped out, so you don't really have a lot of opportunity for that.
Well, maybe it's like, listen, maybe it's sculpture. Maybe it's art by subtraction.
Well, that's what I think. Like,
right?
I think the question is how we strip away. You kind of asked it. Are they using a buyout? You know, Lucic, there's little salary benefit to buying him out, but do you do it to send a message?
How much of, I don't want to say audition, that's too strong. How much of all of these moves do you think Ken Holland makes, and in the back of his mind, he's thinking to himself, we've got to keep 97 happy?
Well, I think you do, but the one thing I think you feel about with him, McDavid, is you have to show improvement. He has to believe in your plan. And I think he will be tempted to believe in Ken Holland. I'm sure if it is Tippett, he'll want to hear, okay, how is this going to help?
Mm-hmm.
He might be skeptical at the beginning because Tippett has the reputation of being a defensive coach as opposed to an offensive one. But, you know, I mean, you always listen. In a year from now, you have to be able to say to Connor McDavid, I see our plan. Look, that Bouchard kid, you've seen
him.
Evan Bouchard's he looks really good. They're going to have another pretty high pick this year. That's the question. Can you convince him a year from now that you're better off?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're going to have to do.
We talked about how improved the Central is now all of a sudden. Suddenly, Central Division is all of a sudden looking real good.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Pacific. And do you see a path where the Oilers can make it back into the playoffs next year? Knowing that there's a chance the Pacific might just send three.
Well, I think you have to depend on goaltending, right? So if the goaltending gets better, you've got a chance. Who's good? San Jose?
Vegas?
Calgary? I mean, Calgary's got a goaltending question too, but they handled that this year. Kings are rebuilding. Anaheim looks like they're going to be rebuilding.
Expect Vancouver to do something in the offseason.
I think Vancouver is going to be a really interesting. Like when Ian McIntyre writes the other day that Vancouver is going to be busy, you got to believe. You know, Ian's sources there are pretty good inside the organization. You got to believe. Like I've heard Ferland is one of the guys they're kind of looking at. I heard they're looking at D.
We've heard that, yes.
Yes.
You even mused in the piece last week about Pernell Carlson.
Yes. I think they're going to look at a defenseman for sure. Like they just announced Rick Dalawal, who works out at our Sportsnet station out there. They're not going to qualify Pouliot. I'm curious about Hutton.
Yep.
We're still waiting on Edler. There's balls in the air there. And I do think they're going to take a swing at a D. Now, I've heard San Jose is still trying to re-sign Carlson, that it's been discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think whether it's a shot at Subban or someone else out there.
So you could see them taking a swing at Carlson?
I can't imagine that is a preferred destination for him. But, you know, I know when he was available last year, they were interested.
Could you see him going to Vancouver?
If he's staying on the West Coast, he's probably staying in San Jose.
Right. Other teams around the NHL, a particular note. Congratulations, Carolina.
Yes.
For a couple of years, we've looked at them and said, man, if only this team could get a save. Now, I was texting with someone from Pittsburgh a couple of days ago who said, listen, this team is good. They swarm you. They play hard. They play fast. I mean, and they've played this way for a while. The only difference is this year they are getting saves.
Yep.
You know, Florida, the Panthers, with the quote-unquote computer boys, were considered the analytics test case.
Yep.
And, oh, after 1 year didn't work, okay, get rid of it. Let's just forget about it now. But really it's been Carolina under the under Eric Tulsky. Previous Ron Francis as the GM, now Don Waddell. How do you read how Carolina has put this roster together and put this team together on a budget that cannot rival the Rangers and the Flyers and the other teams in the Metropolitan?
Look, I think it's a great story. I think they've done really well. And you know what? I think they are a mix of new and old school. Like Rod Brind'Amour is as old school gets. Justin Williams is as old school gets. But I think when you are running the team like they are and they are tight, you have to be open to a lot of great ideas. And they have been. Like Jordan Martinook, 15 goals. Who saw that?
Now, didn't they not pick him up from Arizona because they thought they're getting pushed around?
Yes.
He was going to come in for a little bit of security.
They
blanket.
Absolutely felt they got pushed around last year. But, you know, if you take a look at it, they've done a lot of creative things. They have a bunch of great contracts signed there.
Yep.
You know, Jim Rutherford traded for Jordan Staal and signed him to what, 10 times 6? How good does that deal look now?
It's funny because all those $6 million guys, once upon a time, we said, what are you doing? What are you thinking? They're all bargains now. And that's led by Nathan MacKinnon, but Staal's a good example, too.
The previous administration did Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin. Oh, how good do those deals look now?
So Picasso's.
Tara Vinen to take Bickle. They've got him signed an extension. The new group did that one. $5.4 million. That looks really good now.
I used to joke, Tara Vinen, that's finished for Pat Kane.
Yeah, there you go.
He looks fantastic, Elliot.
Yeah, he looks really good. You know, I mean, like.
And what are they going to do with Aho, though? That becomes.
You know,
like,
I think there was a stat I saw on Twitter that Carolina is the team that's made the Final Four using the lowest percentage of the cap ever.
Ever?
It's below 80%.
It's remarkable.
It's incredible. And that's what you got to do when you are run on a tight budget. And we've talked about Eric Tulsky before and how smart, you know, we think he is and the way they look at things. I think the biggest question I have is, and this is the toughest thing in this league now, is it sustainable? So here's the thing. There was a guy, Matt Cain, and Matt Cain used to put out a thing every year. It was his contract guesstimates. He would say, okay, if this guy signs this year, this is how much I project he's going to get. And he was very accurate. Now, Matt Cain can't do that anymore because he's been hired by the New Jersey Devils as the director of analytics. Okay? And that's another good hire by New Jersey. I think Matt Cain's a pretty smart guy.
Yep.
And I think a few teams have tried to hire him before. So there is a new one this year. There's a Twitter account, Evolving Wild, that is trying it. And Evolving Wild is another analytics account that's got some pretty good stuff. So they're trying it. They've projected Aho at $10 million. Now, I think that's a little high, but I'll tell you one thing. I can see Aho's representative submitting that.
He's going from 925.
But there's no doubt he's a hell of a player.
No, absolutely. And he's in that.
And we also know.
Corner and point.
Yes, we also know that he's been talking with them all year. I think the true test of where Carolina is going in terms of is this sustainable is
the Aho deal.
Is that, and also, you know, Don Waddell doesn't have a contract for next year.
Hang on. Can you see Don Waddell getting bumped back upstairs, although he still does hold part of that portfolio, and they bring in someone as a general manager, and knowing that they're an outside-the-box thinking team, that person is Eric Tulsky?
It could. If any team's going to do it, it's going to be them.
It's going to be Carolina.
Yeah.
If a team is going to do it, it'll be Carolina.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen. We know that the owner really trusts him.
Yep.
So Don Waddell, we talked about this. Waddell doesn't have a contract. Volucic doesn't have a contract. Neither goalie has a contract. I think this offseason, we're going to learn a lot about how they plan to do things. You know how it works, right? Or it used to, it normally works, is that you have to reward people who do well by you, who drive your revenues, who take you far in games. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who's done that for them this year? Aho, who isn't signed.
Yep.
Aho, Mrazek,
McElhinney. Not signed. See, that's the thing about the platoon system as well. It's great while you have the guys under contract. What happens when they're going to get paid? Just as an aside, so Carolina's in the conference final, so they're in the Final Four. So are Charlotte in the American Hockey League and Florida, the Everblades in the ECHL. They've all made the Final Four. So right down the organization, it has been a win for Carolina so far this season. Mention the AHL for one very specific reason.
Yep.
Dave Andrews,
yep,
president, CEO of the American Hockey League, announces he is stepping down after next season. Now, I've always made the point about Dave Andrews, who was very successful at the junior level as well with Victoria, went to the Memorial Cup. That Cornwall team was a juggernaut, but that Victoria team with Grant Fuhr and Bob McGill was a real good squad. I've always maintained that Dave Andrews was the best general manager the NHL never had. AHL lifer, and did a wonderful job. Can you imagine? We talk about how GMs herd cats or presidents herd cats. Can you imagine what it must be like year in and year out to be the president of the American Hockey League with all the movements and all the calls from AHL, hey, can you try this thing out, right? I mean, AHL with a test market for mandatory visors across the league. It's always been sort of to have that cozy relationship with the NHL, obviously, as a developmental league. But there are things that Dave has had to go through and work through that you're not going to get in any other league. And he's done it so professionally.
A few stories.
All the way.
A few stories about him that some guys have told me. First of all, you're totally right. Secondly, they say he's as good at controlling and running a meeting as Bettman is. Like, Bettman has the firm grip, especially now that, because what happens is when he first comes in, you've got the group of owners who've run the league forever, but eventually they sell or they get old and they're gone.
And they become your guys.
And you bring in your guys. Yeah. And Andrews is kind of the same thing. This next year will be his 26th year as president and CEO. They say he runs those meetings. There was one guy who told me a great story about they were in a scheduling meeting and they were trying to get the schedule done. And he told guys, okay, don't come to this meeting without the authority to make decisions. And so team shows up and say, he goes to one team, okay, we're just about done here. I need you to move like this so we can get this done. We're done. And the guy says, I have to call my owner. And he says, didn't I tell you that you were supposed to come here with the authority to make changes? And apparently, and like another guy who was in the room was like, they were all slinking down in their seats. And then he said, apparently Andrews called the guy the next day, like, hey, you know, it's not what I wanted to do. But the other guy said, like, he was totally right. He warned them coming in, like, this is what you have to be prepared to do.
Bring a pen. Don't bring a pencil.
It didn't work, and goodbye. And it was, they said it was pretty funny. But there were two other things that guys told me about Andrews I thought was really interesting. You know, first of all, they said that he's, well, three other things. First of all, they said he was pretty compassionate. Like, he understood, you know, life happens, and he was very good at understanding that life happens. Number two, they said that a few years ago in the NHL lockout of 94, when the IHL decided they were going to sign NHL players and try to compete, he read the floor because he said, we're not going to do that. And not long after, the IHL was out of business and the AHL was in all their markets.
He fought that off.
Yes.
I tend to forget. That was a huge fight for the American Hockey League.
So that was as his term began, but obviously he was influential in the decision not to do it, and that was a huge win because they didn't cross the NHL. And the second thing they said was a few years ago when they were making that Pacific division, there were some teams that wanted to force some deals that were below what other teams felt was market value in order to move them out west.
Okay.
There was a lot of argument in the league, and he called an executive meeting, only one person from each franchise, and he said, look, I may be the commissioner here, or the CEO, or whatever the title is.
President, CEO.
Yeah, I may be the president, CEO here, but the franchise values are up to you guys. If you think I should let this transaction happen to move this team out west for this amount of money, I'll do it. But I think when it comes to franchise values, it's up to you. And someone told me who was there that he made the point of saying franchise values twice in a very short span. Mm-hmm. And he turned the room exactly to where he needed to go, which was, if you want to buy that team and move it out there, you have to make the right offer. And he said that was really smart.
One of the smartest guys, if not the smartest guy in the room. One more season for Dave Andrews at the helm of the American Hockey League. We'd love to get Dave on. I think we're all on the same page about that. I would catch up with Dave every year because he would run the Scotiabank Marathon.
Oh, yeah,
at the beginning of the season,
because
he's a runner.
Yeah.
I think he plays squash, too. And so I'd always catch up with Dave here in Toronto. If not soon, then maybe if he's going to do Scotiabank this year, we'll get Dave Andrews on. We're stepping away, taking a pause, back with hashtag Ask31. By the way, did you see Ask31 actually trending?
You know, my trends are not Canadian. They're worldwide.
International.
Yes, I'm an international man of mystery and superstar. So I didn't see it.
Your question.
You shaking your head at me for
next on the podcast. Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali. Complete with the world's first six-function multi-protocol gate. Hockey season is over for most, but spring is here, and that means things like landscaping and deck building. The built-in load stop will keep all of those tools and materials in place. And when loading or unloading anything, the tailgate also turns into a step for easier access and has an inner gate that flips down for all your needs. GMC Sierra Denali. We are professional grade. Elliot, before we get to hashtag Ask31, one quick note. I got this from my buddy Mike Majeka. Okay, so Mike's in Matula, northern Israel.
Yep.
And a couple of the best weeks I ever spent in my life was in Matula teaching hockey school at the Canada Center in 2010, the summer of. Mike stayed, married an Israeli girl. They have a wonderful family, and Mike still plays and coaches and teaches there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Holik's come over.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby Holik, for those who are wondering, hey, I wonder what Bobby Holik's doing these days. So this is a text I get from Shakes the other day. Bobby was, I said, give me the backstory on what Holik's doing with you guys. It's a great story. Bobby Holik was named the head coach of the Israeli national teams this season. So that's U18 Division 3A, U20 2B, and men's 2B as well.
Hmm.
In Croatia, U20 team finished fifth after moving up from the previous year and avoided relegation. It's a great result for that program. In Bulgaria, the U18 won silver, lost out on the gold medal winning team, Bulgaria, in overtime. And in Mexico, the senior team won gold. So Bobby Holik coaching in Israel. Good on Bobby and good on Mike Majeka.
Do you
Majeka,
think any of his players are allowed to have beards and mustaches?
Or allowed to drink? Is Bobby Holik, do you know the story about Bobby Holik and drinking?
No, tell
me
this.
The first time Bobby Holik ever had a sip of alcohol was when the Devils won the Stanley Cup.
It's the first time
he ever had a sip of alcohol.
That's a good story.
Yep. And you know what he's told me?
No wonder he's in such good shape.
He said he didn't like it and never had a sip again.
As Ron McLean says, I don't trust anybody who doesn't drink.
Then he wouldn't trust Bobby Holik. Okay, quick before hashtag Ask31, trade targets in the offseason.
So I had a conversation with an executive this week who says he thinks that there's going to be a lot of interesting players available. And I promise this every year, and last year it was a complete thud. So hopefully this year will be different. One of the guys I'm kind of hearing about a bit is Spurgeon from Minnesota.
Oh, my God. He's so good.
So he's got a year left, right?
He's so good.
And Minnesota's going to make some changes, and I think he's got a lot of value. I think there's a lot of teams out there that like that guy.
Big time.
So I think that's one of the names I'm kind of hearing is, will Minnesota extend him? Will they trade him? You know, he was number two on my Lady Bing ballot this year behind Morgan Riley. Mm-hmm. He's a really talented guy. He's got a modified no trade clause, I think 20 teams. But I think he's a guy a lot of teams out there would love to get their hands on.
He is so high skilled. Okay, hashtag Ask31 from Jared. As a Blues fan watching the thrilling double overtime game 7, I thought at many times my heart was going to explode. Have you or Friege ever experienced this? And if so, which game?
The closest I've ever come to cheering during a sporting event, which I had since I've been a professional, which I had to stop myself from doing, was at the 2002 Olympic gold medal game.
Yep.
The 4-2 goal, the one that bounced in the air, McGinley, mm-hmm. when that went up and went in, I...
Lost your professionalism for a moment?
No, I held back, but it was close.
Yeah.
Just because also the way the goal went in, it was like, oh, it's not going in. Oh, my God, it's in. So that was the closest.
For me, you know what it's been? And this is going to sound like an insult, but it's not. 2002 as well, the women's final.
Mm-hmm.
Sochi, the women's final as well.
Mm-hmm. That was unbelievable.
And I think the reason is, I've thought a lot about this over the years. The reason for me is, again, this is not an insult. The reason is it slower? The play is slower, mm-hmm. and so the drama builds. When it's just fast, it's like taking a drink out of a fire hose. You don't really get a sense of building drama as much as when the game is slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
And at the women's level, to me it's fantastic because you get high drama, you get certainly high stakes, you get high quality of play, but you can still follow it. Your eyes can still follow it. You can still process it. You can process the emotion, not a million things flying at you all at the same time. I love the NHL. It's great. I love international men's hockey. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It is so fast, and that's awesome. It's fascinating to watch. But just for drama, a slowed-down, high-skilled game, and right now, that's at the women's level.
And also, those two had incredible endings, right?
Oh, fantastic.
The 8 straight penalty kills in 2002 and the 2-0 comeback in 2014.
Those were outstanding for me. Okay, from Kirk. Can you see other teams adopting the storm surge next year? And could this be the new trend, much like the post-game center ice fan salutes?
I can only imagine the strokes that will come from that if more teams start doing it. I mean, why not? I think you have to decide. If you think it appeals to your fans, why not?
The center ice. Were the Rangers the first one to bring it in?
Yes.
It's a very European celebration.
Because when they had all those Czech players.
Yeah,
yes.
So there's a very European celebration, and now everybody does it as mm-hmm. a matter of course. I don't know that everybody ends up doing the storm surge or all skating and body checking the boards, but I think organizations are always looking for ways to connect with their fans.
We're taping this on Thursday before game one of the Eastern Conference Final, but I believe in the pregame tonight, Christine's got a story about the whole bunch of jerks thing.
Awesome.
Sounds pretty good, actually. She asked a lot of the players about it. When they came to Toronto late in the year, Jordan Martinook told a great story about how all of the Arizona players, his buddies there, were ripping him all year about how dumb it was.
Yeah.
And then when he got knocked out by Holyfield, they all texted him and said, okay, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty sweet. Okay, from Jack, Ask 31. The Sabres, Jeff Skinner, coaching front runners. I'm sad.
I don't know if you need to be sad.
Disgruntled Buffalo fans out
there. I don't know what's going on with Skinner. I mean, there's no deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that they are working under the impression he wants to come back. You know, the coaching thing, I've heard Tippett. But as we've said, we also heard him in Edmonton. I've heard Jacques Martin, but I think Ottawa's really on him too. I heard Todd Richards, but I heard that he's not a finalist. I could see Lane Lambert. You see, they keep talking about how they want, most likely prefer a guy with NHL experience. Lane Lambert has been in the NHL a long time. Like, to me, he's not a bad choice at all. Sheldon Keefe. So I saw some tweets. There were some people from Buffalo unhappy with something I said in The Fan. I think if Sheldon Keefe is leaving Toronto for another job, it's a knock-it-out-of-the-park situation. I just don't think Buffalo right now is a knock-it-out-of-the-park situation. Yes, I know you've got Eichel. Yes, I know you've got DeLin. Yes, I know your prospect was the OHL player of the year, the first time a European player has ever done that. Look, they've had a lot of change there. I just don't think that Sheldon Keefe is leaving for Buffalo at this point in time. I could always be proven wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody had said to me they heard Bob Bugner. I don't believe that. I think he was in the mix last time, and I'm not sure Buffalo wants to go back that way. Of all the coaching stops that are left, it's the one I find have the hardest read on.
Speaking of coaching, what was your take on the Maple Leafs announcing they're bringing back Mike Babcock?
I was mostly not surprised, but a lot of doubt was thrown into our minds. I'd be curious to see if he has different assistant coaches. DJ Smith, he interviewed in Ottawa. I could see him interviewing in Edmonton and maybe Buffalo too. I don't know. DJ Smith is going to be a head coach in the NHL at some point. There's a lot of people out there who think really highly of him. Jim Hiller, the other assistant coach, I think is going to be gone. He had a year left under contract, but I understand the Maple Leafs have given everybody permission to talk to him who wants to. I think Nashville's in on that. Hiller has got a good rep on the power play. Yep. I could see Nashville definitely being in on that. And I don't think they're the only ones. I think there's a few other teams too.
From Sab, Islanders, who stays, who goes, who does Lou go after?
I've heard they're really grinding away with Brock Nelson, and we could have an answer not too long. Mm-hmm. Again, I've heard the only issue with Lee is term, and that's a big one for them. You know, Eberle Leonard, I haven't heard as much about. I expect he's going to be on Panarin. I do. I don't think those rumors are out there for no reason.
Could that be an offer sheet team?
Yeah, I think so. I think I mentioned somewhere, it was either in my blog or on the podcast, that I think the Rangers are potentially an offer sheet term. And somebody said that, well, they can't because one of the Fox picks, they need them. And it's conditional that they give up to Carolina. Don't be thrown off with that. You can always work around that. They can change the picks with Carolina. They can say, okay, we're giving you that one and we'll keep this one. That is a very small thing. But yes, I do think the Islanders could be an offer sheet team.
All right, two more. From Steve, Sens COO has quit after a year, and the search for a POHO, President of Hockey Operations, has stalled.
Yeah.
Where do the Sens go from here?
Well, first of all, so their current COO is out is a guy named Nick Ryskowski. Yep. The previous two, Cyril Leader, who was there for a long time and did a great job with that franchise, when he was let go, he was gone right away. When Tom Anselmi left, he was gone right away. Nick Ryskowski is staying for a few months, so it's not obviously as nasty as the other ones were. What it says to me is they're still having trouble making inroads on both season's tickets and corporate sales. That's a bad sign for them, for sure. Look, they aimed high with their list of guys, right?
Yes.
They went after Francis. They went after Linden. They went after Lombardi. They went after Neuendijk. They went after Yzerman. And I think that's a real eye-opener for Eugene Melnyk that they didn't just say no. They wouldn't even talk to him. So I think what they kind of said is once they struck out with those five, they didn't like what was available. And so I think they wait to see if anybody else shakes loose. But for the time being, I think business continues under Pierre Dorion. I think one of the interesting tells this summer is going to be, can they get Thomas Chabot signed to an extension on July 1st? I think that's going to be a very interesting tell for the future of that team.
We'll end on this one. Jan submits, who would be your dream artist performance at an NHL All-Star game? I always see that it's tough.
Why do you spring these on me without letting me think?
I'm going to let you think for a second.
Okay.
Because I'm going to filibuster, and I use this as a springboard for something I've been thinking about for a while now, of ways to make the NHL All-Star Weekend a little bit more interesting and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose part of this might be a little bit mean-spirited, but work with me on it.
Okay.
Well, first of all, as far as artists go, like it's tough because you're not booking for one demographic. You're booking for a family picnic. I mean, this is not just one demo that watches the All-Star game. So you're never going to get an artist that pleases everybody.
Now, are you talking about like during the game or like another specific concert?
It just says dream artist performance at the NHL All-Star game. Probably a concert, I would imagine.
You know, they had Kid Rock controversy there a couple years ago. And aside from just leaving out his viewpoints for a second that got him in hot water, he's an edgy performer, so an edgy musician. Mm. So it shows to me that they're unafraid to do stuff like that.
Okay. You know what I've been thinking about for the past 6 months or so, maybe even longer?
Okay.
That I've wanted to get here on the podcast for a while. I've been thinking about this for a while. I haven't had the right opportunity until I saw this pop up in the Ask 31s. I'm like, all right, I'm going to drop this one on Elliot, see what he says. You know what I would love to see and maybe even be part of? So part of this might just be selfish for me. As part of All-Star Weekend.
Yep.
Media hockey game. It's people from the media suiting up to play. Here's the hook.
Okay.
Players do the announcing. And the ripping. And the commentary. And the stand-up interviews. It's just reverse roles with the media. The media are the players. The players are the media.
Yeah, I'm not...
one-hour game.
I'm not really afraid of that.
You don't think that... with the right... people doing the commentary.
They should do a pay-per-view. They'd make $1 billion.
Right?
In some cases, it could be incredibly mean-spirited.
Yes, that's what I mean.
It'd be great. I mean, if you told me the money was going somewhere that was worth it,
sure,
I would do it.
Let us know what you think of this idea. Tweet us, please.
But in terms of an act?
I have no clue. Because, again, you're not just booking for one specific demographic.
Well, I'm a Springsteen guy. I think that would be incredible. Metallica are big hockey fans. I would love to see them do it. But part of me wants to go, like, who is, like, the most different, warped, like, Cardi B at the NHL All-Star game?
Oh, so you're just looking for something that's completely non-related
like,
to hockey.
Like, what would
you
be...
You just drop an alien in the middle of the game.
That's what I think this question is asking. Like,
your dream artist...
I thought they were asking for something like, what's the craziest thing you could see?
No, just your dream artist performing.
Well,
the
you
NHL
know what?
All-Star
like, the best concerts I've ever seen are Springsteen, Metallica, McCartney, Prince.
You know, when did you see Prince?
I'll tell you when we saw
Prince. Did you see Diamonds and Pearls tour?
I can't remember which
what
one.
What a band.
We saw Prince during the 2011 Western Conference Final, Vancouver, San Jose. He was in San Jose on an off night.
Yeah.
We bought tickets, Shirelli, Najak, and I, and there were a few other people with us. And he was phenomenal, and Sheila E. was on that tour.
Awesome.
And she was phenomenal. So that's one of the best concerts I've ever seen. If I'm going to go here, I'm going to ask them to drop, like an alien into the National Hockey League. Like, who is the performer that you would look at and say, this is really different?
You know who the guy is?
Who's that?
You may never have heard of him before, but he was highly influential for people like David Bowie in the 70s. And I want everybody to go and listen to a song called Paralyzed by a guy with the name of the legendary Stardust Cowboy. I got into the Stardust Cowboy in high school. It is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it from day one. Elliot, when you get a chance tonight, I want you to listen to the legendary Stardust Cowboy, Paralyzed.
I'll listen to it during the game because everybody knows I don't pay attention to the game.
You want, I just read tweets.
Yes.
You want that like bizarre, weird, coming out of nowhere. I think you'll get it when you see some of the people that he
somebody
influenced.
People knows.
No, if you just want Freak Show, legendary Stardust Cowboy.
No, I just want
that's
something
my guy.
Different. Like I want.
Oh, this is different.
Like I'll tell you, like at the NHL 100 a few years ago in Los Angeles. John Legend performed.
Mm-hmm.
And John Legend, I don't know if he's a guy you would have thought of performing at the National Hockey League event. He was really good. I really liked it. You know, I want somebody different. Somebody you would say, I wouldn't expect to see them at
see,
an NHL
Legend
event.
Is polished and good and like professional.
I know.
My guy's Freak Show.
Yeah, that's good too. I like that also.
All right, speaking of music, taking us out today, Close Talker, a three-piece band from Saskatoon. Upcoming EP drops August the 30th, and their cross-Canada tour starts on May the 11th. Here with Half Past Nine is Close Talker on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Every party. No.